Hey, Dan, I just got back from vacation. It's been a nice 10 days for me. I was exhausted, but finally got to go to Canada. I got to see family. It's been 2 years. COVID's been keeping me in the Bay Area. So that was fun. But it was a nightmare getting over there with COVID tests and COVID restrictions, and a nightmare getting back as well. One thing I did notice, it was snowing a lot, and I was walking around and I was staying downtown. I'm looking out at these buildings, and I can't see any of those buildings, but they're so historic. And I remembered, I said, I wish there was somebody with me that kind of could explain the history of these buildings, but nobody was. And then I know that Dan recently joined the San Francisco Historical Museum Society. And I mean, San Francisco has amazing buildings too, and a lot of history as well. Love to hear some of the history that you've learned about before we get started.
Totally. Well, first of all, welcome back, it's great to have you back. It's been a
Thanks.
while since we've seen each other. So San Francisco Historical Society, I joined it because I just love history here in San Francisco. It's got really interesting buildings. It's sort of a unique place because it really developed out of this explosion after the gold rush. It's one of the most rapidly developed cities that there is. And so there's all these different historical buildings. And people take tours around the city to see them. You know, we've got an open air bus that drives all around the city. There's even go-karts. I don't know if you've seen these, but they're little go-karts that you can drive
Oh.
around. They're audio guided. And people love these things. They're very popular. I see them all around. And looking at those things, I was actually thinking about this. You know, self-driving vehicles could really find a new business application in autonomous tours. Autonomous city tours, right? You can have a automated ride around the city to look at all the sights. One of the things, though, right, is the buildings being one of the big attractions. That's why they have the open air bus and the go-karts that you look around. All the self-driving vehicles that I've seen don't even have sunroofs, right? So how would you, unless you're like sticking your neck out the window, how would you have a look at all the buildings, right? So sunroofs in self-driving vehicles, that's going to be a thing for automated city tours. Right. And I was thinking about this and I thought, well, but then how do you open and close the sunroof? Because you don't want to open all the time, right? If you're going across the Golden Gate Bridge, maybe you do. I don't know. But you can't have your consumers opening it up and closing it. If it's automated, it takes a long time. So there's your opportunity, right? You've got self-driving tours, city tours. You want to look up at the buildings, but there's not really suitable sunroofs. I was listening to this really great podcast. Our guest today, Joe Harari, did this podcast on Automotive News Daily Drive about dimmable sunroofs. It's glass that you can automatically dim, and just thought that would be a wonderful idea for self-driving cars.
That is awesome. But forget self-driving cars, even regular vehicles, right? I'm driving down the city. I can't look up and see anything. I'm stuck just relying on, I guess, my dog, if I had a dog, I always see these dogs with their heads out the window, and they're enjoying more of the scenery than any of us that are driving.
That's
And I
what the
think that's
tourists
great,
would look like,
right?
right? Everyone would have their head out the window.
Yeah, and I was thinking the other day when I also heard Joe's podcast, and I was like, wow, he's gotten rid of so many components because OEMs hate more and more components to make these shades and these dimmable things happen. Rather put it all on software and electronics rather than have it as a structured component. And so it's such an eyesore in the vehicle as well. So it's amazing technology. I think it'll have a lot of applications in not only consumer vehicles, but in, I think, a lot of different verticals.
Who would have thought even a sunroof could be solid state, huh? And it looks really cool too. You saw the video on the site too, right? The Mercedes S-Class with
I
the
did. Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, that was really cool. Well, I don't want to keep our guests waiting any longer, so I'd like to introduce Joe Harari, the founder of Research Frontiers, a company developing dimmable smart glass for vehicles and also other technologies as well. How are you today, Joe?
Doing great. Nice to be on your program, Dan. I was enjoying your discussion earlier about the sunroofs, because years ago I had a canvas-topped convertible, and I loved it for 2 months out of the year, and I hated it for 10 months out of the year when it was cold and noisy and whatever. And you know, what Mercedes did is they started putting our SPD smart glass in the roofs first of the SLK. And why did they do that? They were trying to get an extra 2 inches of headroom because the roof is kind of low and they didn't want to put a shade there. So they wanted to eliminate one component that was cutting down on headroom. Now, fast forward, when Bentley presented the sunroof of the future at an automotive glass conference that I spoke at, they actually mentioned us by name, which was very, very flattering. Oh. But they noted that going to a switchable glass sunroof could eliminate 54 components and about 13 pounds of weight in the roof of the car, which lowers the center of gravity and, you know, adds to stability, but also gives you that functionality of being able to bring the light in. So, you know, if there's a very famous phrase, let there be light, we kind of took it one word forward and said, let there be light control. And that's what our company Research Frontiers is all about, is controlling light through any kind of transparent material. Right. And the way we do it is through a film that has nanoparticles in it. And when you apply a very, very modest electric field, these particles will line up and allow light to pass through. And then when you remove the electric field, they'll go back to random positions and block light. So what you see on the Mercedes and what you saw in Munich with the BMW concept was putting this SPD material in front of something that you want to regulate the light for. Mm-hmm. And in the case of a sunroof, it's daylighting coming in and heat. And, you know, by using it in something like the SLK, it actually reduces the cabin temperature by 18 degrees. So instead of getting in your car and it's 90 degrees, it's 72 without using the air conditioner. Wow. So that's one thing. But now you see BMW doing something totally different. They're taking a light source and using the SPD component both for styling and for the control of the light. So it's a very
SPD component. What is the SPD? What does SPD mean?
SPD stands for suspended particle device, and it gets its name because these nanoparticles are suspended in a polymeric system that is distributed through a film. And the way it looks to the manufacturer is just like any other window film. It comes in a roll. You could cut it to size. You can make any size or shape you want. And what's unique about it, though, is when you apply a small electric field to it, it clears up. And you can tune it from dark to clear or anything in between.
Wow.
Really cool. And is that something that happens pretty quickly when you apply the electric field?
Very quickly. So one of the hallmarks of SPD technology, and it's sort of why we picked the acronym SPD, because it's speedy. It will react instantly to the electrical stimulus. And, you know, when you're trying to control light, glare, and heat, instant reaction, it becomes essential.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So what you can do is very cool stuff with it. Like, you know, I mentioned the sunroof application. That's not the only thing. Imagine this same film embedded in a windshield of a car and hook that up to a photocell so that it detects where the sun is and maybe dims a portion of the sun visor only where the sun is so that you have maximum visibility. And then if you take it into the headlight arena or any kind of light, so daytime running lights, brake lights, whatever, now what you're doing is you're giving almost infinite freedom in the aesthetics behind this. So for example, let's say we put this on a headlight. If I wanted to minimize the assembly time of this headlamp, I don't have to have a bunch of segments to make a segmented light source. Mm-hmm. What I can do is have the SPD film activate itself in different, you know, in different segments within the film. So let's say that I want to cast a very wide beam because I'm, you know, on a country road in the middle of the night and I want to see everything around me and there's no cars around. Well, right now there's, you know, mechanical systems for trying to do that where headlights are swiveling or components are turning on and off that you have to separately put in the car. Imagine if it was just one light source, but with the SPD film, you can say, okay, cast a wide beam or cast a very narrow beam because, you know, you're in a city and you don't want to blind people. And, you know, so, and you're doing this with no moving parts,
right?
Or maybe more accurately, you know, millions of moving parts that are a nanoscale that don't break. So
yeah,
it's kind of a cool functionality.
Let's step back for a second, though. We'll come back more to this technology, but let's find out a little about you. How did you get to where you are today?
So Research Frontiers was a client that I helped take public. We're a public company traded on NASDAQ. And they asked me to become a part-time general counsel to the company because we were a small company and didn't need full-time legal. And I basically automated all of the accounting, the legal. I standardized our license agreements because we license our technology to the world's, you know, auto suppliers like glass companies and others. And I got a lot of time on my hands. So I started to get more and more involved with the business end and eventually became the CEO of the company. And it's been incredible to be part of an opportunity to create an industry that didn't exist before, the smart glass industry. And what I really get a kick out of is just walking down the street and seeing cars that are using our technology. Because in the old days, this was, you know, a science experiment in a lab. And when we'd go to do presentations, you'd have to schlep around some pretty awkward prototypes. Now I just say, see that car, see that car? That uses our technology. So it's right. It's great to see that.
That's great.
Yeah. Amazing. Wow. From a legal counsel to CEO. I love the story. How long, what kind of a time span was that?
It happened pretty quickly. I became COO within like 2 years and CEO a few years after that. We were blessed with a founder, our chairman, who really made this technology practical, who, you know, was, unlike a lot of founders, able to give the reins over to other people to do what they do best.
Right.
And he focused on the technology, which he did best. And it was, you know, we achieved some things that people thought were impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, yeah, sometimes, you know, breakthrough technology and there's a market need for it, things can happen quickly. We've certainly seen that before.
Right.
I want to go back to what you were talking about with putting this film over a headlight. I think that's really fascinating because it's in line with a technology that we're developing called adaptive driving beam.
Oh, yeah.
And people complain about, especially with these really bright headlights, the how it can blind you when you're driving down the road. And adaptive driving beam is a system that selectively dims your high beams so that you can still drive with your high beams on, but it just dims it where there's other drivers so they don't get blinded.
Right.
And right now that's done through controlling the light source, but controlling it on the surface of the headlight could also be another way to do this. Do you think that's a viable use?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because first of all, you're going to have infinite control over the amount of light. So if you really wanted to get, you know, into very precise adjustments in the light output, you can do this with our film. Basically, you could dial in any tint you want of the material that's covering the headlamp in order to regulate that. And also you can activate individual segments. So I've seen SPD devices where you're only activating a small segment at a time. So if I only wanted the light beam to face forward and not kind of bleed out, you know, at a wider angle, because maybe there's other cars that the car's sensors are detecting, either the cameras or a photo cell or something. You could have the SPD only direct the light where it's needed. And then going back to your discussion about self-driving cars, it becomes even more interesting in a self-driven environment because you have the car and the driver are going to have different visibility requirements that are going to interact symbiotically with the headlamp.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You don't want your oncoming headlamp, for example, blinding the sensor of another self-driven car. And,
mm-hmm. Right.
And one of the things that, you know, we've talked about at a lot of the automotive conferences that I've presented at is how do you protect the sensor from things like glare? And that glare can come from daylighting, that maybe the sun is in a bad position and it's blinding, you know, the system of a self-driving driven car or a camera system or a lane of, you know, avoidance system or something like that. And the same thing happens at night. You know, how do you prevent a headlamp from, you know, creating havoc in another vehicle? And this is a way for the whole system to work very symbiotically. So there's a lot of cool possibilities. And, you know, if we go into a self-driven environment, you know, think about, you've been in a self-driven vehicle before. You may not think about it as such, but if you've been in a plane or a taxi cab or a train, usually you're not driving those vehicles.
Right.
You know, so what are you doing when you're in the back seat or in the passenger compartment or in the cabin of one of these vehicles? Mm-hmm. You're looking at your phone, you're looking out the window, you're watching a movie, you're checking your emails, you're on your laptop. All of these things that you're doing in a self-driven environment requires a different lighting environment inside the cabin. So what we can do is dynamically give you complete control over that. And Cadillac just introduced our technology on their new flagship all-electric Celestiq, where they've actually taken the sunroof, and we talked about that earlier in the podcast. But instead of just doing what Mercedes did, which is have the entire glass go clear or dark, you could also control individual segments. Mm-hmm. So if you're watching a movie and you're checking your email, you may want to have a certain lighting condition. And if I'm driving, I may want to have daylighting coming in to keep me awake.
Right. So that's, that's extremely interesting. And I was wondering more of the process behind it. So does the SPD technology, does it work equally well on polycarbonate, glass? There's no restrictions on that?
We are completely agnostic as to what transparent material you put our film up against. Mm-hmm. So we've been used on polycarbonate in the aircraft market. Sometimes it's acrylic. In automotive, it's usually soda lime glass, but Corning did a all electric vehicle with Gorilla Glass that used our technology that looked pretty cool. So it doesn't really matter what we're up against as long as it's a transparent material. And if you really want to get, you know, I won't even say futuristic because this is available and doable now. Imagine a window on your car or in your home that is completely clear, right? So it's a clear window. And then all of a sudden it turns into a high definition TV like that scene in Total Recall.
Right.
The problem with that is you couldn't do that before because the daylighting on the other side of the window would wash out the OLED display and you wouldn't get a vibrant image. Well, now when you put an SPD film up against that, when you want it to be a window, the SPD film is clear, the OLED is clear and off, and there's no image being generated, so you have a completely clear window. When you want it to turn into a TV, you turn on the OLED to generate an image, and you turn off the SPD film to make it dark. And now you could get vibrant blacks on that same window that you're going to look out at and see a beautiful scene later on in the day.
How cool. A TV on your window. And I could see communication applications too.
Right. Between and you can have your headlight wink at you.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, see a pretty girl in a car coming on, you could have your headlight wink.
Yeah, you could. That's
true. Very useful. Yeah we've talked before in other podcasts.
But along that line also, I was just going to say along that same line, I say it facetiously that the headlight can blink, but you could also change its shape. You could go from a round headlight to a pillbox shaped headlight, you know, to whatever shape you want. And now you got this dynamically styled front. Mm-hmm. And maybe that dynamically styled front can convey information too.
Yeah.
Definitely. I'm turning. So maybe it's telegraphing that I'm turning the car, not only from the turn signals, but the headlight.
Do these films give off any heat? Because it's a could be an application to clear the top of some snow in certain areas or clear the sensor glass as well.
We try not to have it generate heat, but if you pumped an AC into the same conductive coatings that are operating the SPD for the light control, so the I'm sorry, if you pumped in DC, I think you could generate some heat. Our technology operates off of AC voltage to make those little nanoparticles move. So we just basically take the 12 volt DC from a car, invert it to AC, and you're good to go. But if we wanted to keep it as DC, you could probably use it as a defroster because it's the same transparent conductors that are often used to do that, you know, indium tonoxide.
Wow, lots of applications.
Yeah. And you know, what I like about this is, you know, if you put this on a headlamp, if you put this on a sunroof, if you put this on a side window, if you put it in a sun visor, you're making the car safer. Mm-hmm. You're making the driving experience more pleasant for people right. in the car and people approaching the car from the other direction.
Right.
So you have this, you know, kind of societal good, if you will, by making cars more energy efficient. You know, we could increase the driving range of an electric vehicle by 5.5% by using mm-hmm. this glass. Or wow. reduce CO2 emissions by 4 grams per kilometer. So you're making the world cleaner, safer, and more energy efficient, and you're making the car itself safer. And we talked about if you could eliminate having to raise the roof to increase, you know, headroom in a car, you're mm-hmm. lowering the center of gravity, making the car more stable on the road. So a lot of different benefits besides just light control kind of come to play when you use this technology.
Can you describe, so let's, I hate to get into details on this, maybe not, Dan, but now I'm interested. Can you describe the physics behind this technology?
Sure. So actually, there's a funny story how this technology got invented. If you give me one yeah. minute to do a slight detour, I think it'll be yeah, memorable. Yeah. So back in the 1850s, there was a dog with an upset stomach in a lab in England, and they fed him quinine bisulfate because that's what you did to calm an upset stomach. And the dog urinated in a tray, which either had iodine or the chemist that ran the lab where this dog had done this added iodine. But whatever happened, iodine in these and this quinine combined, and it made a light absorbing particle that was also a good polarizer. And, you know, back then they were using tourmaline and some semi-precious minerals as polarizers. So the scientists wrote up the experiment and then didn't think much of it. And that was in the 1850s. In 1934, Edwin Land from Polaroid was looking for a cheap polarizing material, came across this experiment with a dog, duplicated it with a dog. And but he discovered something else, that when you apply an electric field to these particles, they act as induced dipoles, which is to answer your question, and they will line up when you apply an electric field. And because they were needle-like, when they were in a random position due to Brownian motion, they would block light. And when they were lined up, there was very small surface area that would allow light to pass through. And Edwin Land called it a light valve, just like you have a water valve for water. This was a light valve, but he couldn't get it to work. The particles would settle, they'd clump together. Fast forward to Research Frontiers, our founder was brilliant, Bob Sachs, and he looked at the particle that was made from this dog urine and figured out, first of all, how to make it so that it would be much more functional. So it wouldn't clump, it wouldn't settle, things like that. He was, you know, a brilliant, brilliant scientist. And he figured out how to synthesize it. So, you know, we were worried that we'd have to go from dog urine to elephant urine when we got it to mass production. we were able to completely synthesize it. And now you have factories in Japan or in Germany or in Israel that are making the chemistry, these particles synthetically, and, you know, chunking out, you know, the capacity with the factory in Stuttgart is 1 million square meters of film. In Japan, it's 400,000 square meters of film. In Israel, it's 365,000 square meters. So there's a lot of capacity now around the world to do this and put it into things like sunroofs or headlights or anything. And, you know, one of the things you asked how we got here, I mentioned that Mercedes was looking for a way to eliminate the need for a shade. Mm-hmm. That, though, was a tremendous benefit for us, because not only were they successful in that quest, but they put our technology through conditions that they will admit did not exist on Earth. They built a special weathering chamber to test this. They did an endless summer test where they took these cars from, just like the movie Endless Summer, where the surfers are following the sun around the world. They were taking this car from one hot climate to another, to another, to another. Remember, this is a sunroof, so it's horizontally oriented glass. It had to withstand tremendous amounts of heat. Mm-hmm. So they took it from Death Valley to Dubai to Laredo to, I mean, just all over the hot parts of the world. And they put it in the Arctic Circle and all over the cold parts of the world to test this. And then they, of course, did accelerated testing and things. And there have been tens of thousands of cars on the road now with this technology in probably, you know, the most extreme environments on the planet. Not one reported problem. So we went from lab technology to commercial technology, which might have been considered bleeding edge technology. But through the work that Daimler did in proving this out and putting it in cars, it became cutting edge technology. So now it's, you know, pretty much an off-the-shelf material, just like glass or stainless steel, that any manufacturer, whether you're making sunroofs or headlamps or whatever, can use. You know, whatever suits your desire. So these adaptive beam headlights are a perfect example of how you might want to deploy this, because now you have infinite control, and the design, you know, the design studios are going to love this because you could change the face of the car, you know, by changing the shape of the headlight. You know,
that's right. Amazing.
That's a great story. I mean, this technology is 170 years in the making.
Yeah.
It predates the
automobile. Yeah, I was a very small boy when that dog was around.
Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. Oh, by the way, is this something that vehicle owners now can retrofit their vehicles with and get an aftermarket upgrade?
It would be expensive to do it because this film in its ideal iteration gets laminated in between glass to be part of a laminated glass product.
Okay.
So you would have to replace the window with a laminated piece of glass with this in order to implement it, which is doable. I mean, just think about it. If, you know, if somebody broke your window, they were trying to break into your car, you take it to the local glass shop and they will take out the old glass and put in new glass. The only difference here is you'd be putting in smart glass as opposed to, you know, the original glass.
Right.
And you could also work with affixing this to an existing piece of glass. It's just you have to pay more attention to the optics, you know. So if you affixed it on the inside of a window, you could do that, but, you know, you'd probably want to put anti-reflective coatings and things that would prevent fingerprints, because everybody would see this cool film that's switching tint and saying, oh, what is that, and press it and touch it, and, you know, then you have a lot of fingerprints all over your car.
I was going to say, what are the challenges in terms of cost?
So like any new technology, we started out as a high-priced item. And, you know, the big question mark at Mercedes is they were putting this in a $45,000 car. So not their top-of-the-line Maybach or SL. They were putting it in the SLK. They didn't know how this option would sell. Mm-hmm. But customers absolutely loved it. So it migrated from the SLK, which is a $45,000 car. They said, okay, you know, it works really well. It's not going to embarrass us if we put it in the flagship convertible. So then they moved it into the SL, which is a $100,000 car. And as you can imagine, as an option, the take rate of this on a $100,000 car was phenomenal. And they were expecting really good take rates. It was a multiple of what they expected. It was really, really good. So then they said, okay, what else can we do with this? And the S-Class Coupe came out. Now, coupes tend to have rounded roofs, three-dimensionally curved roofs. And you can't just open that like a sunroof. And you can't do what they did with the SLK and the SL, which is fold this piece of glass into the trunk. It's too big of a piece of glass and it's three-dimensional. So they decided to put this on the S-Class Coupe. And once again, the take rates were multiples of what they expected on that car. So they said, okay, now that we know that we didn't mess things up by using this bleeding edge technology, that really is cutting edge and reliable technology, then they started to put it on the Maybach, you know, and their flagship S-Class. And then McLaren started putting this on their cars, and it went from one model to another to another. It's on five different models, you know. And then, you know, now you have electric cars like the Cadillac Celestiq that are coming out with it, because they've discovered along the way that this also can increase the driving range without having to change your battery technology. So you have more of the car's power driving it and less cooling it. So a lot of cool progressions have happened to get us where we are. And it's a lot of fun because, you know, you see new uses like that, you know, that LG display, Panasonic display I mentioned, where your window turns into a high definition TV. Or what McLaren did is put this in the sun visor built into the windshield so that it automatically will block glare.
Amazing.
Wow.
And now, you know, if you look at the video from BMW, it's stunning. I mean, I don't get tired of watching that. It's just an amazing, amazing aesthetic. And think about what you would have to do. So imagine a headlamp with a bunch of individual segmented lamps, okay, to create that effect. So what do you have to do? You have to, in that case, you would have to have individual connections to each lamp.
Right.
You may have to assemble each lamp separately. So think about a lot of taillight assemblies. There are three or four components. Car makers, they measure profit by how much does the component cost and how long does it take to assemble the car.
Right.
If you could reduce, you know, a three segmented taillight with a one segmented pop-in taillight and still have the same effect of different lights doing different things at different times, you've reduced the cost, if you will. So you have all these practical advantages of getting in. And then the other, you know, part of your question about cost is there's been a couple things we did to get the cost down substantially. So without giving you the numbers, because Mercedes would probably kill me if I mentioned what they were paying, I can say that between the first car that used this and the first and second car, and the third and fourth cars that use this, the price went down in half. Since then, the price went down much further because we started to introduce competition in the marketplace. For example, multiple glass suppliers supplying sunroofs, multiple companies making the SPD film, not just one company, Hitachi Chemical at the time, but now you have two companies, one in Japan and one in Stuttgart, competing for that business. So that got the cost down. And that second company, Gauzy in Germany, was able to build this factory specifically optimized for SPD technology. So it was much more efficient in how it produced it. The turnaround time was much quicker. The technology was 11 years newer than the Hitachi factory because, you know, by benefit of when they introduced this. So they got the cost down to, I can't mention the percentage, but a fairly substantial double-digit percentage reduction.
Wow.
So we've constantly been driving the cost down of this technology because it is a basic technology, like stainless steel or glass. It just happens to allow you to control light. So we felt that if we could get the cost down, people would come up with newer, you know, uses for it, like maybe your adaptive beam headlight or, you know, something else that very innovative that has functionality and safety and other things without increasing the cost of the component, because now you have you know, piece of film doing the heavy lifting, if you will.
Well, thanks so much for being here today and speaking with us. This was an amazing technology, and I look forward to having it on my vehicle someday in the future.
Send me your address. Well, I'll send you a McLaren.
I'll send it right now.
Oh, and when you send me the address, tell me the color, okay? Because, you know, although lately it's hard to get the color you want because of some of the supply chain issues, so you may have to settle for one. Not your first choice.
I wanted to ask you, you know, you're in a great position. You've done a lot with your career. What are some of the advice you can give to newcomers or new grads or new professionals that want to enter this industry?
Okay. First bit of advice is when you get out in the real world, understand that you know more than you think you know about reality. A lot of people come in there saying, oh, I don't want to make a decision. Remember, if you just came out of college or you know, some type of engineering program, you probably had access to the latest and greatest, and it's very recent. So use that as an advantage. Trust your instincts. And what I guess the most important piece of advice I could give someone that's just coming in is, senior people, if they were smart, would seek you out to work with you because you don't know what can't be done. And if you don't know that there's a limitation to what can be done, you will accomplish great things. And I always try to seek out, when I was a lawyer, the guys that just came out of law school, because they didn't know that something couldn't be done. They figured out a way to get it done. And the same thing in our tech company is get the new guys. They don't know that there's, you know, artificial limitations imposed by the brain and not the laws of nature on things. And, you know, if you let them loose, they'll accomplish great things. And if I had a nickel for every time someone told us that what we wanted to do with the suspended particle device smart glass was impossible, and I had PhDs telling me this stuff was impossible, you'll never be able to achieve that. If I had a nickel for that, I would never have to sell any glass. often when someone says something's impossible, it just means they haven't figured out how to do it yet. And a bit of advice is, you know, stay determined, you know, and go with your gut on a lot of stuff, and you could accomplish amazing innovations in whatever you set your mind to do.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
That's wonderful advice. Thank you. I think that's that'll be really great for a lot of our listeners. I think newcomers sometimes feel a lack of confidence because they feel their inexperience works against them. But I love your comment, you know, that being new, it actually can work as an advantage. That's wonderful.
Old guys like me, if they're smart, will seek out young guys that are fresh with the brain that, you know, sees the wonders of the world and asks why not.
Yeah. Right. Wonderful. Well, in closing, I do have one question that I think requires some experience, at least experience living in New York. I know you're on Long Island. I used to live in New York myself. I was there for a couple of years. And one thing coming from California that I really enjoyed was the pizza. Everyone talks about it. And when I went, I understood why. What's the best pizza?
That's not a tough question. but I will say this, within like 3 or 4 pizza places in New York, it's like asking a New Yorker the best way to get from the East Side to the West Side. You're going to get 6 different opinions that are so strongly held that they'll fight over it. But by far the best pizza in New York was a little pizza place on East 14th and Avenue J in Brooklyn called DeFara's Pizza. And
DeFara's Pizza.
I discovered this before it was well known. And I walked in, I said, oh, this is really good pizza. And then it got voted the 3rd best pizza in the world at some point. And there was a line out the door, and they doubled the price of the slices. And there was still a line out the door. And Dominic DeMarco, he was in his 80s, used to grow a lot of the ingredients in his garden. And he would take such craftsmanlike care when he assembled a pizza, and you can taste it. So I don't know if DeFara's is still around in its current iteration with Dominic, the father, doing it. I know his son's opened up a couple ones. There's one in Vegas now and a couple of other places. If anyone's going to CES.
We're going there. We're going there for sure.
I think that DeFara's has a place in Las Vegas, and you'll see some cool smart glass iterations there too. Not to tease you. Yeah, there's going to be some amazing stuff at CES using our technology that'll blow your mind. So look for the Gauzy booth, G-A-U-Z-Y. They're our licensee that makes the film. They're going to have some incredible technology.
Yeah.
Excellent. And go to the Flowers for the pizza.
We'll go there for sure, too. Thank you so much. That was great.
Smart glass got popular and the price dropped in half, and the pizza got popular and the price doubled.
The price doubled.
There we go.
That's the business you want to be in, Jim.
Yeah, I know. Pizza. Okay.
Well, thank you so much. That was great. Thanks to everybody for joining us, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast.
And go to smartglass.com.
Go to smartglass.com.
There you go.
All right, Joe. Thank you so much.